Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter, and today I am speaking with Keith Berman. He is the CEO of Decision Diagnostics. The stock symbol is DECN, over the counter. Keith, welcome.
Good morning. I guess it's morning still by me.
Absolutely. So, let's kind of jump into, what your company does. There's a lot of news coming out on your company. Maybe you can bring us up to date, anybody who's not familiar with Decision Diagnostics.
Well, Decision Diagnostics is a very interesting company. It's evolved over the past several years, and now we are a manufacturer, an R&D operation, where we make at-home diagnostics, and our diagnostics are manufactured to run on medical devices, all of them successful medical devices that are on the market and marketed by large pharmaceutical companies.
Okay, and these are diagnostics for what? This is a glucose monitoring, or what kind of diagnostics do you do?
Yes. We make diagnostics they are glucose test strips that run on what the industry would call legacy meters. And what that means is these are meters that are on the market and have been for a number of years, very successful market by four large pharmaceutical companies. Johnson & Johnson, which just sold their diagnostic products to Platinum, a private equity firm, Abbott Diagnostics, Roche Diagnostics, and Bayer Diagnostics, and we manufacture test strips, which are consumable items that will run on a number of those meters that are currently on the marketplace. We've been modestly successful, but probably more well known for our litigation against Johnson & Johnson, but we've been modestly successful selling our product for their diagnostic meters, and now we're moving into Abbott and Roche and Bayer, based upon the success that we've had, and the technology that we've recently come out with.
Okay, so how big is the market for for your for these test strips?
Worldwide, $25 billion.
$25 billion of test strips are sold each year?
Yeah, worldwide.
Wow.
In the U.S., about $10 billion of that. It would be higher, but Medicare came out with their competitive bidding, which basically destroyed the mail order marketplace. Which is only now recovering. But the two major markets are the U.S. and Canada as one major market, and then the other major market is the European Union.
So how are you competing in this market? Like, what differentiates, your strips from, the competition?
From an R&D standpoint, we have developed test strips that are slightly better from a technological standpoint than the existing test strips, legacy test strips, the old line test strips on the market on the one hand. And on the other hand, we provide these test strips to the market at a great discount.
Okay. And so let's kind of get into that. How, like, in what way are they better, and how much of a discount to the competition is there?
Well, let me deal with the second part of that first. And we look to discount our test strips by 50% versus the legacy sellers. So our test strips run on the legacy glucometers, and they sell at a 50% discount or more to those test strips that that have been on the market for a while. And in terms of how much are they better, in some cases substantially better, in other cases modestly better, but better is still better.
Okay. When you say better, like in what way are they better?
They are better from a statistical standpoint in terms of their accuracy and precision, which is the model that the marketplace uses. It's a model that the FDA uses as well.
Okay. So I guess my question then is, if you have this, you know, substantial cost advantage that you're offering, why haven't you gotten 10% of that $25 billion market?
Billion-dollar market.
Billion, yeah.
$25 billion. Our mainline test strip, the one that has been on the market for 4 years, encountered Johnson & Johnson's litigation team that tried very hard to keep it off of the market. And, you know, litigation runs in fits and starts. So, you know, they had initial success, and then we overcame that success and are now selling our product on the market. They go to a lot of trouble to keep our product from the market, and actually went to the trouble of threatening their own franchise holders by... Johnson & Johnson makes a lot of products, and these franchise holders were threatened with the inability to sell baby powder if they bought our test strips.
Huh.
And that's a very difficult tie-in to overcome, because you don't want to be in the litigation business forever. You know, you'll fight them tooth and nail, your technology versus their technology. But, you know, fighting them on antitrust issues and things of that nature is just not something that we have the resources to do. Now, we're branching away from Johnson & Johnson into other legacy companies. And, in fact, the FDA will receive our application for the next legacy company that we're going after, where we've completed our clinical trials and the data is just spectacular. So we don't think we're going to have any pushback from the FDA on this product, on the next product that we're going to do. And then we've made an improvement to our existing Johnson & Johnson competitive technology, where we have the ability to overcome certain legacy-related issues, because some of these products have been on the market for a while. And we have a hematocrit correction technology, which we're now bringing to the market, which for the first time will allow us to sell a meter. And that should go in front of the FDA beginning in January. But our test strip will still run native on the Johnson & Johnson meters as well. And that's very, very exciting, because for the first time it'll put us into a competitive situation where, and we won't be dealing against Johnson & Johnson, we'll be dealing with the people that bought J&J's division, Platinum, where we will truly have something that they will be interested in. Because if they're not interested, they will continue to see their market position erode.
Okay. Now, what are there other companies that kind of, I guess, other independent companies that sell these test strips, you know, for the legacy market?
There's one company a U.S. division of a Japanese, of excuse me, of a Chinese company that does sell a Me Too product. But that product has been very troubled in the past and continues to be troubled. And they just can't seem to find the traction, which is good for us.
So you're saying that there's $25 billion worth of these test strips sold, and they're all essentially sold by the meter manufacturers, right? So
the legacy manufacturer, the company that designed the meter and the test strip.
Okay.
Yeah, they're considered legacy manufacturers.
Okay, and so you're saying that potentially you can. You know, how what percentage of that market do you think you can pick up?
Well, we're just looking to pick up 10% of that market. We're looking to pick up 10% of 71% of the market. So, you know, the legacy manufacturers control 84%. We're going after 71 of that 84%. And we're looking for a 10% market share.
So I don't have my calculator. Okay, so the $2 billion is what you see as the potential for your company in terms of sales?
Is our target.
Okay. Uh-huh. Assuming everything goes right, of course.
Assuming that that our test strips are approved by the FDA, which, you know, is always an assumption, but what we have to do is certainly much less than what a drug manufacturer has to do. Our R&D group has done a spectacular job thus far, and one of the things that we have done is that we've introduced our products into the veterinary, the pet market, first, just to see how the product will perform in that market, because that tells us how it's going to perform in the human market next, once we get FDA approval. And by the way, the next product we're introducing, we're going to introduce internationally first, which tends to be how companies... American-based companies do that these days. The FDA takes their time, not as much time as they used to. Certainly, the animosity between the FDA and small business is less than it used to be. But we want to check the veterinary market first, and we introduced our PetSure product into that marketplace as a prelude to our Gen Choice product, and Gen Choice is going in front of the FDA before this year is over.
Okay, what kind of margins are there on these strips?
Well, for the legacy companies, their margins are in the 85% area, and will be in the 70% area.
Those are impressive margins.
Yeah, you know, it's not pharmaceutical profits, but it's still very good.
Okay, so you know, Keith, can you kind of outline like what's the path to get to that? If we can just give us like kind of a general idea of what the path is to go from where you are now to that potential, $2 billion in sales? Things need to happen?
Sure. Well, assuming that we remain capitalized like we are currently, we will deal with these products one at a time. So we have one that's going in front of the FDA, and this is a completed product, clinical trials already done. We have one that is going to go in front of the FDA late in December, and the moment we file that application, we will make that product available for sale in select international markets. We will file our EU application. And by select international markets, that's typically Latin America, South America, India, Pakistan, areas where the government approvals are much less. And then by then, you know, we'll be selling in those markets. And then when the FDA approves it and the EU approves it, the EU approach will take 90 days to 180 days, somewhere in there. But the product will be for sale, and we will be advertised. And, for example, it'll be selling on international Amazon sites before then. And so we'll get a big heads up. And then, of course, we have the veterinary market, which requires no approvals, where we already have the packaging complete. And in fact, our PetSure product is the same as our GenChoice product, and it's already for sale. And then we're going to have a PetUltimate product, which is our GenUltimate product with a meter, and that will be for sale toward the end of this year as well. And in fact, we've already brought on a master distributor for the PetUltimate product. So very exciting times.
Okay.
But because we're undercapitalized, it's a one-step-at-a-time approach.
Okay. So I may have missed something. So the what you have coming up in front of the FDA is what? Is it a test strip for one of the other legacy meters?
For one of the other legacy manufacturers.
Okay.
So that's our GenChoice product.
GenChoice. Okay. So right now you're only selling for the J&J.
Correct.
Okay.
Not that that's chopped liver. You know, that's still 30% of the market where we're currently growing in.
So manufacturer will the new product be available for?
Well, I don't really want to go into that because that manufacturer may react like J&J did and may bring a lawsuit against us before our product hits the market. So let's just say it will gather a whole lot of interest when it hits the marketplace.
Fair enough. Okay. So but I think you mentioned there's there's three or four of these legacy manufacturers in the space.
Four.
Okay.
And the four are Roche Diagnostics, J&J LifeScan Platinum, number two, Abbott Diagnostics, number three, and Bayer, number four.
Okay, so basically you're going to roll out products for each of those manufacturers, to run on those diagnostics machines, like over the next, what period of time do you think?
I would say that in the next 18 months, we will be involved in all four of them. Right now we're in the J&J market. We're going to pick off another one of the legacy manufacturers here very shortly when we file the application with the FDA and the EU. Then we're going to come out with our own product, which we call our Precise product. And it's kind of interesting because it will offer a feature, and it will become FDA approved. We'll file that with the FDA as well. But the Precise product will be next, and that will set a new standard in the industry. Currently, the FDA and the EU look for what are called plus or minus 15% products, which means that they perform at a level where an at-home tester, a diabetic, will receive a highly accurate result, plus or minus 85% of the time. So it's a plus or minus 15% product. Our product will be a plus or minus 8% product, and that will set a new standard because it will have the ability to eliminate the single remaining interference, which is hematocrit. And hematocrit interference is the one area that legacy products do not correct for in a uniform manner, in a uniform way. And both the ISO standard and the FDA standard are mandating changes, and we just have the ability to get there faster.
Okay. Can you explain what exactly is that?
Well, hematocrit, all of these products are whole blood products. All the legacy products are whole blood products, and which means, you know, you poke your finger or the palm of your hand, and a little droplet of blood, whole blood, is read into the legacy meter. And included in that blood is red blood cells. And the meter endeavors to screen out as much of the red blood cells as possible, leaving only plasma, which is hopefully read by the meter, but a substantial number of the red blood cells still leak through, even with the screening process. And we're endeavoring to come out with a product, and actually we have. We've been very successful in trials of this product thus far, which will take the screened blood and then take a reading of the screened blood and determine how many red blood cells still remain and then correct for that and then run the glucose. And that's how we get to the plus or minus 8%.
Okay. And this this device, is this going to compete head-on with the four legacy manufacturers?
Yes.
How far off is commercialization of this?
Product is ready today. As soon as we gather our resources after filing for our Gen Choice product, we will then file for our Gen Precis product, which is the precise product, and that will be first quarter next year.
Okay, so
everybody will want that product. It will become a major house brand for every chain pharmacy. It will become a house brand for the Walmarts of the world.
Now, you mentioned that it's more precise, but are you going to have a cost advantage?
Oh, yes. Yeah, actually a major cost advantage because the technology we use is cheaper to begin with.
So I don't know if maybe this is a little bit early, but what's going to be their kind of competitive advantage are you going to offer the consumer versus legacy?
Well, if you look at the legacy products on the market, they are all providing at the retail level costs that range from, let's say, 85 cents per test strip to $1.25 per test strip. And that has been trending down a little bit, but it's still way up there in the 85 cents to $1 per test strip market. We're going to be at a quarter. And you'll get a much better result.
And what about the device itself?
Well, the goal is to design the device and then give it away.
Huh, okay. So you're going to basically price it very competitively, in other words.
Yes. The test strips will be a quarter and the device will be free.
Wow, okay. Okay, and how much does the what does the legacy devices sell for?
About $20,
Okay.
$50 overseas.
Okay. That's a good value proposition.
Yeah, these legacy guys, they tend to battle each other, based upon features, but they all tend to cost the same. So they use their marketing budgets to try to steal users and trade them back and forth. And that's pretty much been the case for the last 10 years. This is going to be very different. This is going to be a device where we give it away. And the end result will be you buy our test strip, you're going to get a better result.
So I want to get into some of the litigation happening with was it Johnson & Johnson? It looks I think I'm kind of looking at your stock chart. There's been a couple of big run-ups in the past few years. I guess as news flow with the case has come out and different as these things have progressed. But can you kind of bring us up to date on what is what the status of that is, how what potential
Sure.
outcomes there could be, and also maybe then we can get into what potential litigation you might be facing with the legacy players who will want to maintain their the current position and how you're going to overcome that.
Sure. Before I get into the Johnson and Johnson area, let me discuss the second part of your question first. I guess I'm getting a habit of doing that.
It's fine.
In terms of the other legacy manufacturers, they're dealing with a very, very changed marketplace. They may decide that we infringe on their patents, but we go to great trouble not to, because it makes no sense to come up with a product that will never see the market because it infringes on an existing patent or patents. But the market for that, the litigation, has changed dramatically, where patent lawsuits, for the sake of filing a patent infringement lawsuit solely to keep a product off the market, where the manufacturer doesn't care if you actually infringe on their patents or not, they're going to allege that you do. That has changed dramatically. And the reason that it has changed is the court system, the manufacturers, the entire environment has changed because nobody likes patent trolls. And as a result of the elimination of most of the patent troll litigation, it has had a major impact on the manufacturers that use the litigation environment to keep better products off the market. So what we're looking at may involve additional litigation. It may not. But from that particular standpoint, what we have to deal with on the market, as opposed to 2011, when J&J first sued us, and then spent 5 years trying to keep our product off the market, knowing full well we didn't infringe on their patents, that has changed dramatically. So what we're going to face as we introduce additional products is a much changed market, and the ability to defend ourselves much different. And in fact, what we're looking at is a whole lot less patent litigation and a whole lot more trade dress litigation. And to that end, we've insured ourselves out the wazoo with trade dress defense policies. And that's an entirely different market. That's an entirely different environment where if you get sued for trade dress, now you're dealing with commerce issues and a lot less with highly technical, very slow, ponderous patent issues. And that's really what we're looking at going forward.
Okay. And so let's, I guess, get back to the J&J. What's the status of...
Yeah, the current status is actually the current J&J lawsuit is following the first J&J lawsuit, where J&J has this unique ability to manipulate district court judges. And what we're going to do is they received a summary judgment from the Nevada District Court judge, and we filed a notice of appeal, and in the next 2 weeks we're actually going to appeal to the Federal Circuit, where we've had wonderful outcomes in the past. We've had three great outcomes from the Federal Circuit because those judges really understand the technology, where district court judges do not. So that will go to the Federal Circuit, and we're very confident that the Federal Circuit will then, I don't know if the right word is beat up the district court judge, but they will certainly set him straight. And then our case will go back to the federal, to the district court in Nevada. At the same time, we believe that when Johnson & Johnson sold their division to Platinum, they actually only sold the assets. And so we're looking at strike suits to try to unravel that sale of assets, because we believe that in selling the assets and holding back the liabilities in the original LifeScan is a typical M&A ploy, where 6 months from now we kind of think, or 6 months from October 1st, we kind of think they're going to put the old LifeScan into bankruptcy to eliminate their liabilities. So we're looking at additional litigation while the patent litigation simmers.
So it might be maybe too complex if I ask you, you know, what the potential outcome is if you're successful. What's the upside, in dollar terms?
We believe that if there had not been an M&A transaction, we're probably looking at a settlement in the mid to upper eight-figure area. Mid to upper eight figures, and that would be on a settlement. But if we can try to force somebody to look at unraveling the M&A transaction, and we're not the only ones that are looking at that, by the way, we think we can get to that point where Johnson & Johnson will want to settle the patent issues while it's still in appeal, at the same time that they want to settle this demand that we unravel, our demand that they unravel the litigation to bring an end to the litigation involving the M&A transaction. So we're kind of attacking it on two fronts.
Okay, and now. You mentioned a possible settlement. Have they floated any offers?
I don't want to get into that. At least until we file the second lawsuit.
Okay, and who's your law firm that's handling this for you?
We use Fox Rothschild.
Okay, I guess they're an IP firm.
They have an IP division. They're a very large law firm, okay. Philadelphia-based.
Okay. Okay, so let's get kind of back into kind of some projections. Assuming everything works out outside of the outside of the litigation, I guess, which is kind of has some upside. But assuming you get all the products on the market, where do you see where do you see the potential revenue potential 2 years out?
Well, we believe that the Gen Choice product, the one that will go in front of the FDA shortly, the one that we're going to sell internationally in the meantime, we look at that as a $50 to $70 million a year product. We look at the Gen Presys product as a $50 to $70 million a year product. And they won't compete with one another. You know, we have a great story to tell to existing users, to existing legacy users. Here's a better product, slightly better, but you're happy with what you have. We'll give you a little bit better at half the price. And that's a very forceful story. And as we build the brand, you know, our Gen brand, if you will, more and more of the large pharmacy chains and Walmart and so on will want to carry this because that's kind of how commerce works. You know, you're going to have a legacy brand and you're going to have a generic brand or alternative brand. So, you know, we look at every one of our products to be $50 to $70 million products once they hit the market. And with the changed litigation environment, the ability to get there faster certainly works in our favor.
So potentially, if everything works out, you could be doing 100 million plus in revenues 2 years out?
Yes. And
Okay.
by then there will be additional products.
Keith, what kind of let's kind of get back to so your background and some of, also some of the key members of the management team.
But by the way, can I go back to your just for a minute to your forecast
Sure.
question? Okay. Gen Presys is a game changer. Okay? Now, why is it a game changer? Because it will offer the market something that they don't currently have, which is a much better product available to everybody as a substitute for their existing generic products, where the end result, the results that the diabetics receive, will be substantially better. And we believe that's a game changer. We also believe because the Gen Presys will continue to be our test strip that will work on the Johnson and Johnson meters, that it's the kind of product that perhaps Platinum will want to turn into a must-have.
Okay, that sounds sounds very compelling.
It is. It's a very compelling story. And it already works. So now, you know, we're just counting down the days until it's available on the market.
Okay, so Keith, can you tell us about your background, how you got started with this company, and also some of the other key members of the team?
Okay, well, basically, my team here at the company is the same team I've had for 15 years. So actually, we're in second generation people now.
Okay, and what about what's your background?
Well, my background is basically 40 years in the same business. I started out at Technicon in the late 70s and early 80s. I moved on to Boehringer Mannheim. I brought to market the very first diabetic test strip and meter in the early 80s. Behringer then sold to Roche, and the product that we brought to market and the technology that we had at Behringer has become Roche's technology now. As a direct result of that, I decided to be on the other side of the table and launch our own products and sell against the legacy products. But basically, I've done the same thing for the last 40 years. The chairman of our company, Robert Jagenich, I met him at Technicon, and we've been together for 35 years.
Okay. So,
a lot of experience here. I do all of the technology development here at Decision Diagnostics. I spec the products out. I've been down the road with the FDA about 500 times in my career, and I outsource the technology to commercialize. I employ somebody that has 40 years of experience himself, and then we outsource the commercialization of the technology to our Korean partner, and that's how we were able to bring it to the market cheaper and quicker.
So it's going to be manufactured in Korea to get the cost savings.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay. Is there something that you think investors may not quite understand about your company? And if they did, what is it that you think that investors might be missing in terms of the Decision Diagnostics story?
Well, I mean, here's the bottom line. What do you consider an investor? Decision Diagnostics has 4,500 shareholders. I would guess that over 4,000 of them are penny stock traders. More interested in the game and stock appreciation than they are as to what the company actually does and what it's trying to make itself. You know, I receive 40 phone calls a day. I have a bunch of regulars that call that want to know, how each of the company's milestones is being achieved. But for the most part, many of the phone calls I receive are from people that are only interested in the stock price.
What do you think the story is well understood by investors right now?
I don't think the story is well understood by the majority of our shareholders, but I also believe that those people don't care, or don't care as much as professional investors do. But yes, I do believe that our story is well known to the large investors in the company. And, we have a number of those as well.
Okay. So, along those lines, in your opinion, what do you think are the, at this point, the key value drivers that, investors should focus on when looking at your stock?
I think investors should say to themselves, here is a company that is well on its way to gaining a brand and having multiple products to sell to a huge marketplace and has done so on a shoestring.
Okay. And let's see, are there any other things that you want to cover?
No, I think in this interview we've covered quite a bit. By the way, I appreciate this no end.
Hey, no problem. Our subscribers will appreciate having you on.
Well, I appreciate the amount of time you put into this.
Keith, on that note, I want to thank you and we look forward to following the story in the months ahead.
I appreciate it.